From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. A new report called Running on Hate has found widespread Islamophobia in the election campaigns of 2018. The report, which was commissioned by the group Muslim Advocates, found about 80 campaigns run by almost exclusively Republican candidates that have engaged in anti-Muslim rhetoric and messaging. The report's authors say it, quote, attempts to make sense of this new wave of anti-Muslim conspiracy theorists by documenting their campaigns, their messages, their wins, and their losses. It also dives deep into original public opinion research to understand the narrow sliver of the electorate these candidates hope to influence. Much of the Islamophobic rhetoric echoes President Donald Trump's language. Despite the report's disturbing findings, there is a record number of Muslim Americans running for office this year. My guest is Scott Simpson. He's the Public Advocacy Director of Muslim Advocates. Welcome to the program, Scott.
Thanks, Sonali. It's a pleasure to be with you.
So what was it that the report set out to do? It seems as though it's sort of part research into what these campaigns are and part opinion survey.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And, you know, to be clear with you, you know, and Sonali, you know this, you know, your program is excellent at documenting the civil rights struggles facing American Muslims in many communities. And you know very well, and your listeners know very well, that anti-Muslim attacks, attacks on mosques, discrimination has been on the rise in a major way. It's an unprecedented increase in the last few years. And academics and smart advocates have really well done a good job documenting the connection between anti-Muslim rhetoric and the discrimination and hate crimes and mosque attacks that we're seeing. And, you know, I work at Muslim Advocates. We're a national civil rights group for Muslims. And, you know, as you can imagine, we never take for granted or assume that our days are going to be easy, because these attacks are happening on a weekly or monthly basis and we have to respond. But we knew that responding isn't enough. In this climate, we can't just wait for more bad things to happen so that we can respond to them. We wanted to prevent these things from happening to begin with. And the place where that starts is the political rhetoric. It starts with looking at the rhetoric that Donald Trump used in the campaign, but also all of the 80 candidates that we found since Trump who have been trying to run on his messaging, his anti-Muslim messaging, anti-Sikh, anti-Middle Eastern, anti-Arab messaging. And so we really wanted to document it, analyze it, so we understood exactly what was being said. We wanted to take this very seriously. But we also wanted to confirm a suspicion that we had, which is that we knew that this rhetoric had spread nationwide. We see it day to day. And we also knew, though, that a lot of these candidates were losing. Like we could look at a lot of the candidates, even credible ones. They seemed to be losing. And we felt like it was very important that the conventional wisdom that we hear day in and day out, which is that it's popular, which is an assumption to make, that we make, is wrong. And so we set out to document that. So we were very thorough. It's a 51-page report. We didn't plan to write a 51-page report, but it could have been 100 pages. There were so many lessons that we learned just by mapping these candidates, analyzing their rhetoric, and then going to voters and doing opinion surveys of them to see how they respond to it.
So let's tackle the part of the report that actually examines real campaigns that are happening right now. Did you look at campaigns that are being run by candidates, all of whom are basically going to face their test on November 6th? So it's very specific to the midterm elections?
Well, we included the 2017 elections as well. There was a few special elections right in 2017, and then statewide elections in New Jersey and in Virginia. So we included them. We really wanted to map every candidate. I don't care if it was a special election between now and then or the 2018. So it includes all of them. The vast majority of them have lost. So that's the good news. We saw this in the 2017 campaigns for sure, but also in the special elections and even GOP primaries in 2018, that the vast majority of these candidates will lose. And there's another conventional wisdom out there or assumption that's made, which is that a lot of these candidates are sort of on the fringe, that these candidates are gadflies. But the report made very, very clear that that's not the case. There's very credible mainstream, potentially winning candidates who are using anti-Muslim conspiracies to gin up votes. And most of them are losing too.
So the candidacies that you found engaging in this, what you call anti-Muslim conspiracy theories, seem to range from local races to national races. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. We found anti-Muslim candidates in every region of the country, in every type of jurisdiction, be it urban or rural, be it progressive or conservative. And we found them at every level of office. So we found these in school boards and planning board, local planning board races. We found them in mayoral races, city council races. But we also see them at the congressional and gubernatorial level as well.
So what are some of the conspiracy theories that some of these candidates are floating? And why do you refer to them as conspiracy theories? It's they're not just sort of plainly demonizing Muslims. They're doing that through false narratives?
Well, so they're doing both. And it's really important to understand how the demonizing of Muslims and the vilifying of Muslims that we see, be it just through a slur, for example, which we've seen in some instances, works together to tell a story that's very, very troubling. There are some anti-Muslim think tanks and organizations and some elected officials who for years have been sort of weaving a very grand conspiracy theory about Muslims in America. The theory goes this, that Islam is not a religion at all. In fact, it's a violent political ideology, and that there is a conspiracy between Muslims and non-Muslim allies to take over the United States government and to replace the Constitution with Sharia law, and that they'll do this through nonviolent or violent means. That's the conspiracy. And when you take a look at all of the rhetoric that's being said, and you can look at Donald Trump's rhetoric, he very clearly cited, he really told that story through his rhetoric. But that's also what the other candidates are doing too. So a lot of these candidates, and whether they know it or not, are perpetuating this very particular conspiracy theory. So we see this in some ways. You know, one of the most anti-Muslim campaigns we've seen this election is being run in the 50th Congressional District of California. There's a candidate named Duncan Hunter, and he's facing off against an opponent who's of Palestinian descent, a non-Muslim. He's a Protestant, and he's running ads and claiming that that he's part of a conspiracy amongst Muslims, the Muslim Brotherhood, to infiltrate Congress. He's saying that Muslims are infiltrating the schools in San Diego, which is where this congressional district is based. He's saying that Islam is an ideology. It's not a religion. And this type of story, in one way or another, is being told all over the country.
And that particular race, by the way, is Duncan Hunter against Ammar Campa Najjar, Palestinian Christian. So Scott, it sounds as though the anti-Muslim rhetoric is, it's when there is an actual Muslim candidate to rival, it takes on an even greater urgency or greater threatening aspect to it, which is interesting because, as I mentioned, there's a record number of Muslim candidates running for office this year, which unfortunately sounds like the Islamophobes use as a part of their conspiracy theories. Look, they're taking over.
That's correct. Yeah, Dr. Saeed Abdul Saeed was a governor candidate in Michigan, American Muslim. Doctor, I believe he came in second or third place in the Democratic primary there. I believe he came in second place. And he has been sort of the public enemy number one for many of these candidates, saying he's a Muslim Brotherhood conspiracy theorist. And even in races where there isn't an opposition, for example, we'll have the first two Muslim congresswomen coming up in this upcoming congressional term. Out of Minnesota and out of Michigan, and those candidates are running unopposed. And in their absence, there are right-wing anti-Muslim activists and organizations that are flinging the exact same insults at them.
Right, so Ilhan Omar of the Minnesota race has been, we reported on how she's being targeted with some really horrific sort of smear campaigns.
Yeah. Horrific. They are. They're horrific. And these campaigns and attacks, they are very out of touch with reality, and they're very absurd, and they're very shrill. But the temptation is to write them off as absurd and out of touch. But they work together to tell what is actually a very sophisticated campaign that is really worth mentioning here. Even, for example, the Barack Obama is a Muslim sort of lie that we've heard over and over again, and still, by the way, resonates with a certain segment of the population, by the way, which we can talk about later, plays into that as well. And the especially troubling feature of this rhetoric to me is that it's actually a very sophisticated effort to remove basic civil rights protections to American Muslims. I say that because about a third of the attacks that we saw were claiming that Islam is not a religion and thus not entitled to the basic religious freedoms and protections that are given to Christians and Jews and other religious minorities in this country. And so they can be banned or tracked or registered or surveilled, or their mosque can be banned. That is a very coherent long-term strategy that we have to have our eyes wide open to, that there's an effort to erase Muslims as a religion in this country. And that's what which sounds absurd, but it's coherent. And it has mainstream candidates and the president all a part of, all sort of singing from this hymnal, so to speak.
So Scott, let's talk about this survey part of the report running on hate, essentially what was it that you surveyed? How did you dig through opinion poll research to determine that actually the Islamophobic rhetoric, anti-Muslim rhetoric doesn't play well among the majority of the American electorate?
Yeah. Well, you know, it feels like, I think, to people like me and groups like ours, where we see just how vicious the attacks are, it can sometimes feel like the whole country is against the community. Yeah. And but we know instinctively that's not true. You know, I think that we can appreciate our neighbors and people who are sympathetic in the Republican Party, in the Democratic Party, and independents, who really are turned off by this sort of very shrill anti-Muslim rhetoric. And that conventional wisdom that this is very popular, we just felt like it might not be true. So we did we hired a Republican pollster to help us figure out what voters think about Muslims and what voters think about the candidates and the messages that these anti-Muslim candidates are using. So what we did is we tried to ask this in a lot of different ways because we wanted really honest opinions from people. And so we surveyed 1,000 voters, and we essentially message tested. We gave them two candidates that were hypothetical candidates, and we would give a anti-Muslim conspiracy message that we found to be common, and we even used ones that we felt were moderate. Like, we didn't use the ones that we thought were the most shrill and outlandish. We used ones that we thought might be more likely to appeal to a broader part of the electorate. And on the other side of the debate, we had a message that was pro-Muslim. It was pro-religious freedom. It addressed the same issue, but it essentially was the counter. And the pro-Muslim message won super majorities of all the questions we asked, from every demographic group, from both parties, and from every region. And that's really telling. The conservatives who said they don't like anti-Muslim messages, they were very clear that they were, and from a religious context, some religious conservatives felt like, or religious GOP voters, I should say, felt like attacking religion is wrong. Many of them felt like racism was wrong. They didn't sit well with them. And they felt like even they, who I think many folks assumed would be the most hostile to American Muslims, weren't. There were, however, and this is really important because this isn't all rainbows coming out of this, of the survey. There's a core, sort of a core group of about, I would say, 10 to 15% of voters who will just, who will agree and repeat back, even when unprompted, some of the most horrific and horrible anti-Muslim conspiracies and statements.
So there's basically a small minority that just is determined to believe that all of the conspiracy theories about Muslims.
Yeah, they'll repeat it back, and they'll consistently agree with messages that are very anti-Muslim. So you're looking at a maximum of 15%, I would say, if I had to, if we had to sort of take a look at it, who like this, and that's a really scary and that's a really disheartening claim to make when we think about the whole country. But when you think of it in an electoral context, it's very, very hard to win with just 15% of voters, especially when the rest of voters not only don't like it, they really don't like it. They're animated in the other direction. And I want to say this because I think this is really important. What we found, this was so encouraging, is in places across the country, places that you might have never expected, anti-Muslim candidates faced serious backlash. Communities organized against them. The GOP organized against them. They were forced to recall, to get recalled. They withdrew their candidacies. They lost their primaries in GOP primaries. So the assumption even that this is popular within the GOP isn't especially accurate. There's a constituency there, but it's still the minority even within people who identify with that party.
But Scott, at the same time, if these campaigns that your group has identified as using anti-Muslim rhetoric and campaigning as they run for office, if these are almost exclusively Republicans, there is a problem in the party that the party's leadership needs to tackle. If these were sort of uniformly spread through both parties, that wouldn't be an issue. Then it would be an issue of our political culture we need to tackle. There's something about the political culture of the Republican Party that fosters this.
Well, I don't think it's that cut and dry. I think that there is a vocal constituency within the Republican Party. I certainly think the president believes these things. And the president is appointing hate group leaders to his cabinet. We're deeply concerned. He's putting Muslim bans in place. Even what he said the other day, where he's trying to find ways to scaremonger about Muslims or Middle Easterners, as he put it the other day, when there's
the migrant caravan, heading to the U.S. From Central America. Trump claimed there were Middle Easterners mixed in.
Yeah, and so he's even inventing claims like that. So there's certainly a constituency within the Republican Party. The president is certainly the leader of the party, but I don't think it's sort of settled orthodoxy within the party. I don't think that, and I don't think that's, I think that there's hope. So I see hope in the Minnesota GOP chairwoman. Minnesota has a lot of really rife anti-Muslim bigotry in the party. And the chairwoman of the Minnesota GOP has repeatedly condemned it. The Michigan GOP has condemned anti-Muslim bigotry within its party over and over again. And we've seen GOP candidates actually get disavowed by the party and had their endorsements withdrawn from the party as well at the city council level. So I think there's hope that this bigotry isn't unanimous. But they're certainly on the rise, and these folks are certainly keeping on going. But I also think the election is going to be very telling. These folks are losing. The vast majority of them are going to lose. In fact, I think the projections seem to indicate that the only people who will get elected are people who have been elected for a very long time. You have people like Steve King, who is having a historically challenging race, very anti-Muslim, has been anti-Muslim well before Trump. He's likely to get reelected is based on the projections. So I still think that there's hope.
Well, Scott, I'm glad you do. I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Where can people get a hold of the report and read it for themselves?
Sure. You can go to MuslimAdvocates.org. We have a link on our homepage from MuslimAdvocates.org. And if you don't want to read all 51 pages, that's fine. We have a one-minute video, and we have a very good executive summary. Now, it's really important, I think, for folks to understand what we're up against, and we really try to be as expansive as we can, because there's a role that everyone has to play. I don't care if you're a Democrat or you're an independent or you're a Republican. Everyone has a role and has a chance to reduce the bigotry that's happening in our political system, or at least to try. And the way to do that is to understand it and make decisions for yourself fully informed.
That's MuslimAdvocates.org. I want to thank you so much, Scott, for joining us.
Thank you for having me. Have a great day.
You too. Scott Simpson is a public advocacy director with the group Muslim Advocates. We've been discussing the new report called Running on Hate. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, subscribe to our audio podcast on iTunes, and our video channel on Vimeo.